Hey everyone, this is the Libertarian Atheist Podcast, found at libertarian-atheist.com. Make sure to check us out on Facebook as well as our YouTube videos. My name is Carlos, and we also have Calvin as per usual. How are you doing today, Calvin?
I'm doing great.
And we have MK Lords in studio. How are you doing today, MK?
Doing great.
Megan is in town due to the fact that we just went through Porkfest, Porcupine Festival in Lancaster, New Hampshire. It was a fantastic, incredibly drug and infused. Celebration of liberty that is cataclysmic, and it's basically the mecca of libertarianism as far as I'm concerned. You got mountains, you got beautiful people, you got a lot of drugs, you got incredibly cheap ticket prices,
and everyone is armed,
and a lot of us are giving speeches, and you don't actually have to show up to speeches to actually enjoy anything.
That's true. I barely went to any speeches.
I didn't go to a single
year.
One.
I think I've been to 10 speeches to one, in the 3 years that I've been here.
Yeah.
And 3 of those were my speeches. So I really haven't been to many. There was some cool shit, though. One of them was Sifa Kinsella having a debate with an objectivist named William, and it was absolutely ridiculous. So I always love the minarchist versus anarchist debates at anarchist conferences, because anarchists do not take that shit lightly. It's kind of looking.
They'll fucking heckle you.
Did you see Gary Johnson whenever he came to?
Yes, I did
fucking
see that. Well, so it's funny, they'll heckle you, but they won't break the NAP. So yeah. They're not going to throw tomatoes at you or anything.
Mm-mm. Absolutely not. So my speech over there was called Rapists Are Everywhere, The Case Against the Stranger Danger Generation. Now, obviously, I'm making fun of the kind of outrage porn that's usually used to sell specific messages. I'm using outrage porn whenever I'm going to release this video. It's going to be called Trigger Warnings of Bullshit. So, you know, I'm guilty of it as much as everyone else is pretty much guilty of being a hypocrite. But there's one aspect of the speech that I wanted to go in more in depth, especially with Megan here and Calvin as well, which is the idea of trigger warnings. And the best way to do that is by trying at least a slightly nuanced approach. And the best way I've always found to do a nuanced approach is by looking at the most two extreme kind of versions of definitions and ideas in regards to it. So Calvin found a rather humorous, but I think insightful definition of trigger warning that I think our audience might like to hear. So go ahead.
All right. This is from Urban Dictionary. A trigger warning is a disclaimer for autistic, emotionally unstable people who cannot read certain words without having a self-diagnosed panic attack due to their self-diagnosed PTSD. Words like rape, cut, barbecue, Twix bar, bus, penis. Basically any word can trigger a Tumblr feminazi into a sweating, crying mess. Rather than growing up, trigger warnings are meant to make people attempt to avoid words that would trigger someone. Clearly, writers, bloggers, and authors should censor themselves because the fainting goats of the world cannot deal with reading some letters on a screen. We have a footnote down here explaining what exactly it means when a feminazi says she is raped, which is she has a horrible flashback to the one time she slept with a guy and regretted it later.
Now, obviously, there's a bit of satire in there, which I always enjoy because I'm a bit of a dick.
Just a bit.
Megan, you had a different definition that might be a little bit more suitable.
Yeah, so this definition comes from geekfeminism.wikla.com. And so I do want to go into kind of maybe the origin of trigger warnings really quick. And it kind of comes from the academic side of things. And it's a way to protect people from viewing content that might cause them to have a traumatic flashback. So the definition of this on this site is trigger warnings are customary in some feminists and other safe spaces. They are designed to prevent unaware encountering of certain materials or subjects for the benefit of people who've had an extremely strong and damaging emotional response. For example, post-traumatic flashbacks or urges to harm themselves to such topics. Having these responses is called being triggered. They also have a list of content to warn for, and this is a trigger warning is something that you would place at the beginning of content to warn people that it might cause them to have a strong emotional reaction. And this list is very interesting. I would like to get into this. So it says content which is widely agreed by feminist blogs and fandom writers to be warned for are actual descriptions of war, like the Vietnam War or the U.S. operations in Afghanistan. I'd like to come back to that one because I'm a huge anti-war proponent, and that's interesting. But some of these, you know, some of these also do make sense. So graphic descriptions of or extensive discussion of abuse, especially sexual abuse or torture. Graphic descriptions of or extensive discussion of self-harming behavior, such as suicide, self-inflicted injuries, or disordered eating. Depictions, especially lengthy or psychologically realistic ones, of the mental state of someone suffering abuse or engaging in self-harming behavior, discussion of eating disordered behavior, or body shaming. And sometimes there are more, it's a bit broader than that, discussions of violence, things like that. So
yeah,
that's the other definition.
So one of the things in regards to trigger warning that it has to do with, now, both of you have already mentioned the idea of post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a serious issue that many people in many different environments have to deal with. So George Carlin used to talk about how post-traumatic stress disorder was, as he used the term, pussified, whenever they repeatedly changed the word in order to be able to basically try to coddle people in the definition. So it was first known as shell shock. And in the clips during the show, I'm going to go and throw in the video clip of George Carlin talking about this. So go.
They're only words. You can't be afraid of words that speak the truth, even if it's an unpleasant truth, like the fact that there's a bigot and a racist in every living room on every street corner in this country. I don't like words that hide the truth. I don't like words that conceal reality. I don't like euphemisms or euphemistic language. And American English is loaded with euphemisms because Americans have a lot of trouble dealing with reality. Americans have trouble facing the truth. So they invent a kind of a soft language to protect themselves from it. And it gets worse with every generation. For some reason, it just keeps getting worse. I'll give you an example of that. There's a condition in combat. Most people know about it. It's when a fighting person's nervous system has been stressed to its absolute peak and maximum, can't take any more input. The nervous system has either snapped or is about to snap. In the First World War, that condition was called shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language. Two syllables, shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. That was 70 years ago. Then a whole generation went by, and the Second World War came along, and the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now. Takes a little longer to say. Doesn't seem to hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. Then we had the war in Korea, 1950. Madison Avenue was riding high by that time. And the very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion. Hey, we're up to 8 syllables now. And the humanity has been squeezed completely out of the phrase. It's totally sterile now. Operational exhaustion. Sounds like something that might happen to your car. Then, of course, came the war in Vietnam, which has only been over for about 16 or 17 years. And thanks to the lies and deceit surrounding that war, I guess it's no surprise that the very same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder. Still 8 syllables, but we've added a hyphen. And the pain is completely buried under jargon. Post-traumatic stress disorder. I'll bet you, if we'd have still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time. I'll bet you that. I'll bet you that. Yeah.
Now, as far as that's concerned, one of the actual benefits of redefining it from shell shock to post-traumatic stress disorder is the fact of the matter is that a lot of people who are affected by post-traumatic stress disorder didn't have shells being shot at them. It wasn't actually gunshots. I mean, foster children, for instance, are more likely to get post-traumatic stress disorder than veterans of war and less likely to recover from it. Now, as far as handling post-traumatic stress disorder, there's many different approaches to dealing with it. It actually includes things like Ibogaine, ecstasy, a number of other drugs. Psychotherapy, obviously, is another beneficial tactic to deal with it. But in regards to trigger warning, my issue is that it is not substantiated by the evidence to deal with post-traumatic stress disorder. For instance, what they have found over and over again is that the way to deal with traumatic situations is not by ignoring it or by throwing it away. It's actually by systematically integrating many of those ideas more and more into the person's mind by bringing up the events, by discussing these different points. It is not by simply stating, oh, well, we're never going to talk about rape again, because what that does is creates perpetual victims. What do you all kind of think about that?
Yeah, I have talked about trigger warnings on Freedom Fiends before, and it's something that, so okay, so let me back up a little bit. So I have been triggered before Right. This is something that does happen to people, and it can be very distressing and very upsetting. But as you mentioned earlier, the way to deal with a lot of this, what therapy has kind of discovered in, you know, more recent years, is that confronting these triggers and working through those emotions is a way to heal from that trauma, and it pushes you in a right direction. So I've kind of poked fun at the idea of trigger warnings, because I think a lot of times they're abused. Like, they are put on pieces of literature, for example, that may have, you know, uncomfortable dialogue a little bit, but may not necessarily be depicting graphic violence, for example. So I do think that trigger warnings are a good idea in some ways, as far as, or you could also call them content warnings. If there is some graphic discussion of like rape or, you know, other kinds of extreme violence, it might be a good warning, you know, if someone does have PTSD. I get that the intentions behind it are good, right?
Almost everything are good, though.
Right. The intentions are that you want to protect people, but that's also a bit paternalistic. You're also saying, yeah, well, maybe you can't handle this kind of discussion. And to me, that does create an idea of victimhood instead of survivorship, for example.
Yeah. Not only that, but out of the list of things that you read from that site that might warrant a trigger warning, how many of those things are actually talked about with trigger warning in front of it? It's usually very mundane bullshit that people like to discuss on the internet. Very rarely do you have descriptions of extreme violence preceded by trigger warnings.
That's a good point. Like the descriptions of war, I've read some extremely graphic descriptions of war. One of my favorite sites is antiwar.com, and they don't mince any words when it comes to the severity of war, and they don't use trigger warnings on them. And I think, especially when you're talking about war, this is something that should be a bit confronting for people.
It should.
Because it's not something that a lot of people tend to think about and put a lot of, you know, reflection into. And so, the trigger warning thing is, I haven't seen it used. It says, you know, content to warn for in this, you know, wiki, but I've seen it more on feminist blogs, regards to sexual violence.
University of California right now, they're actually adding it in on older literature.
Yes.
For instance, The Great Gatsby actually has a trigger warning on it.
Right.
Which is trying to create a generation of essentially fainting goats.
Well, in all earnest, that book did just about give me PTSD. It was so goddamn
so fucking boring. Jesus Christ.
Trigger warning.
Trigger warning. Shitty book. I'm okay with that trigger warning. All right. So on the idea of trigger warning as a whole, though, this goes into the coddling thing for me. So, and, you know, we'd actually, this might be, I just want to kind of think this through, because people who have been like beat up in the back of bars, robbed, hit in the ear, which prevented them from being able to balance for long periods of time, really fucked them up. We rarely ever treat them as if their entire life they are called assault victims. So I think part of my problem is that it almost eternally puts them in this position of, you are always this. You are, yeah, and forever will be a victim. And as a result, you've been damaged forever, and you need to be coddled like a child, kept away from normal society, fear the idea of anyone ever discussing controversial topics, lest you black out or become hysterical. And I don't think these people are realizing that they are putting women in the same position that they are stating that the patriarchy puts them in, which is essentially that,
yes,
they're weak, feeble-minded, oversensitive children. And this infantilization leads to a necessary growth of a paternalistic state which can protect these poor, weak victims. Do you kind of gather that also from trigger warnings?
Oh, absolutely. And this is a critique of radical feminists that I refer to pretty often. And yeah, it is sexist in a way, because a lot of the times they do focus on survivors of sexual abuse, which do tend to be a large amount of women. And so that is what it's geared towards. And it's really, yeah, like you said, it's really infantilizing, and it's almost offensive, especially if you've gone through traumatic events and you've persevered and done your best to recover from them. Someone saying that, oh, well, you can't possibly tolerate this kind of content because it might hurt your feelings or it might trigger you. It, again, being sensitive is a good thing, but being overly sensitive in this regard is insulting and infantilizing. And again, it's the difference between victimhood and survivorship.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, I prefer to use the term survivor when talking about victims of rape or sexual assault, because I think that's more empowering. And I think when it comes to trigger warnings or traumatic events in general, we should be pushing more towards an empowering view instead of a demeaning view of the person who has gone through that trauma. So this is why I think survivor is a much better term, and encouraging people to confront some of these maybe very dark feelings and work through them is even more beneficial than saying, hey, we have to protect you. We have to bubble wrap the world so you don't get your feelings hurt.
Yeah.
I see this whole term as kind of a spiritual successor to the whole check your privilege thing that got really popular a couple of years ago.
I don't see it as being the same.
Well, both of them are, in theory, they have noble justifications, but what I see most of them being used as is sort of a bludgeon to stifle conversation.
Word.
Basically, just a way to get you to shut the hell up about unsavory topics that sometimes warrant discussion.
There's a trigger warning on this definition of trigger warning. I just have to point that out. The one I just read, and I did find that, I will say, a little
were they
humorous.
Being ironic? Or
No, they were being serious.
Oh, that's right.
A discussion about a discussion, right? A trigger warning on a discussion about a discussion. And that's where I think it's going a little bit too far.
Well, there's a lot of words, though, even within religious talk, though, that people generally use whenever they're trying to cut a conversation, too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm offended, or that's my faith. You know, and it's all these things tough for conversation, which prevents real argumentation, which prevents real kind of understanding. And I honestly put this, in some cases, they have trigger warning in particular cases, or the privilege check or anything else, as being kind of an aspect of the people are allowed to believe whatever they want to believe, and that's okay, and it's fine, and just move over it and don't deal with it. And for me, I think ideas and beliefs really matter, and they're substantial to how I'm going to deal with other people for the rest of my life. And I don't really want relationships with people where I have to tiptoe around every single topic. Now, if I'm talking to a rape victim and instead of making a bunch of rape jokes, I can understand why they might not find that funny. But by trying to put safety pads on every single part of their life.
Just bringing up the topic itself is supposed to be too traumatic.
Sometimes. Yeah, no, and the thing is, it's fucking absurd to actual victims of these particular cases. You know, it's similar to whenever someone, and this is kind of slightly tangential, but you know, whenever someone like says they have cancer, everyone starts to treat them as if they're a cancer victim. And it's one of those things where, like, everyone's going to coddle you. And actually leads to, I've known some people who've had cancer and didn't even tell anyone because they just didn't want to be treated like that.
Yeah, people don't like to be treated with kid gloves.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, you know, people go through traumatic events. And while it's good to be sensitive, you know, especially if they open up to you and you know the kind of situation they've gone through, that doesn't necessarily they may be looking for sympathy or maybe even more so empathy, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they want to be coddled.
I think we talked about this a little bit ago, but it was kind of the idea that a lot of the times whenever you express tragedy that has occurred to you to someone else, you end up having to take care of them.
Yeah, like, we did. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you say something happened to you, like when you're younger or something, they go, I'm so sorry. Then they get really upset and you got to like hug them and go like, it's okay. Yes. It's okay. It's like, wait,
don't worry. What? I survived.
Yeah. Like it's weird. I have to now coddle you. Like, and it's really strange because the way that we handle trauma and victimhood in our society is kind of weird. And especially whenever we try to forcibly contextualize more victimhood than actually existed. So this will happen with, I was working for ChildSafe, it's a nonprofit dealing with molested kids. That's why this is kind of the triggering thing and dealing with these subjects is kind of important to me because I kind of saw it. You would have a kid who's like 5 years old and he played with another kid's penis who was like 6 years old. And there were people who would like try to fucking shame him like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened to you. This thing happened and everything else. And that contextualizing of victimhood actually made it a lot worse. And I see this in in, there's absolutely rape in college. And there's absolutely rape where people don't know that it was rape in college. But sometimes they, I've seen people try to contextualize something as being way worse than it actually was. And whenever you, whenever you layer in the ideas as far as demeaning people who have dealt with this particular issue by you know, coddling them in this particular case, and then putting more people to feel as if they were in a position where that exact same thing happened to them, you're kind of doubling down on the inability to be able to foster empathy and real-world learning and progress as far as yourself is concerned by pushing that down, by sticking that victimhood on that particular individual. And I mean, and for me, I, as far as the speech was concerned, how it kind of connected me was that I found trigger warnings is kind of a natural progression of stranger danger. Because stranger danger is, you don't ever hang out with strangers. You got to be afraid of fucking everything. Be afraid of candy, right? Be afraid of fucking Reese's Pieces. Do you know how many cases there were of poisonings during Halloween by random strangers?
None.
Zero. It was parents. Fucking zero. There was parents. There was fucking crazy ass parents, but that was it. All right? But we all had to open up our fucking candies, and our mom checked it, and then my dad ate half of them while he was checking them. And God damn it. Just because you pay all the bills and pay for all my food doesn't mean you can get 2 pieces of 25-cent candy. But with the stranger danger thing, though, it is a weakness, right? You're supposed to, you are weak and feeble, and you need to go towards others, and you need to be coddled in that particular way. And I think it's, it kind of makes sense to me because the helicopter parent gets replaced by the helicopter dean and the helicopter dictator. Because in all these cases, you are removing the locus of control from yourself, removing your own sense of self-responsibility, autonomy, individuality, and integrity, and placing that onto someone else to protect you. And when you're a kid, they force you to do that by never talk to a stranger, so therefore never be able to contextualize whether something is a threat or not. And when you're, by the time you're in college, you know, you're already used to essentially being a child, because even children now are being treated as less than children, something like basically a fetus that needs to be constantly protected yet abused on a constant basis. So basically the state is just like a really drug addict pregnant woman who constantly keeps, you know, putting down beverage after beverage while destroying the child while acting as if it's the most precious thing on earth. And I see that happening to the college kids as well, where they're putting them in these positions where, again, they're being damaged by the ideas that are supposed to protect them. And I think triggering in the same way, as far as we were discussing post-traumatic stress disorder, the issues with it, triggering, the trigger warnings to me are almost as contradictory to their main purpose as the government is to its main purpose. It prevents actual healing, understanding, compassion, and empathy and growth in the same way that the government's welfare programs are supposed to promote safety, community, and the enrichment of individuals. It does the exact opposite in that particular case as well.
Yeah, so one of the things mentioned in the definition I gave was safe spaces, which I think is a pretty good idea, you know, if they're voluntary. But you've seen them used at the academic level to as a kind of foil to uncomfortable topics. And an example I'll use is at Oberlin College. Christina Hoff Summers recently spoke there, and there was a huge outrage. And I was actually arguing with all of these people about this in Oberlin. There was a huge outrage over her speaking there because she was putting forth these kind of triggering ideas, but really they were slightly controversial to the typical progressive mindset. And the thing about college, at least what I understood it to be before I went there, was that it was a place that where you would be challenged on your beliefs, where you would have to confront these uncomfortable topics, and you would have to work through them. You know, your beliefs would be challenged in a very serious way, and I'm very much for that. You know, controversial things need to be discussed and hashed out, even if they're uncomfortable, even if they are, you know, very disturbing. And if you are in a class where something, you know, where you are going to be experiencing some very disturbing content, you know, I think maybe there is some place for trigger warnings. But going back to Christina Hoff Summers, she is not a radical misogynist by any means. If you read her stuff, she has a very well-balanced view of feminism. In fact, she's known as a dissident feminist. She is not an anti-feminist, which is what a lot of radical feminists would have you believe. She still strongly identifies as a feminist, and she just disagrees with the general direction that she's seeing things going. And Oberlin community really had a freak out about this, and they organized an alternative event while her event was going on to provide a safe space to people who might be disturbed by her discussion of gender norms and rape culture and some of these other topics. And that's all right. You know, that's all fine and good. But before they put the safe space up, what they did was try to shut down the discussion by protesting and writing, you know, letters to the administration and things like that, saying, we don't even want this discussion to happen. And I think that is the probably most dangerous conclusion of trigger warnings and this kind of very pro-PC culture, is to, like Calvin, you were saying earlier, to suppress discussion of triggering ideas. And to maybe bring some balance back to the conversation, have either of you ever been triggered by something? Do you know the feeling?
Yeah,
once
I saw someone hit a kid, right? I saw someone, I was at a grocery store seeing someone actually physically abusing a child, and that triggered me in the sense of I was seeing something that was incorrect. So then I felt that I needed to respond in that particular case.
I believe we already have a term for that. It's pissed off. I see plenty of things that piss me off.
Well, I think triggered is a little bit different from being pissed off, though.
I don't know if I've ever, no, I had a girl like smack me in the face one time, and I actually weirdly set off this very specific part of my brain that was way more upset than I should have been. But I think it had to do with something that happened to me when I was younger. But still, the main problem was the fact that she fucking... So I don't think I've ever been triggered by words, actually.
I don't think I would ever go on the internet.
No. Well, no. I don't think I have in their sense. And it's not like I haven't had to deal with some aspects of post-traumatic stress disorder. My 8-year-old's holding fucking guns at me, walking the houses that are infested with shit, and seeing pictures of a child who had maggots in their vagina because someone molested them with mayonnaise, right? That is some fucking traumatizing shit, but I've never read words that ended up triggering that in me. Instead, it was trauma that I had to deal with later on through things like therapy or understanding, and it didn't have to do with other people's particular words, though. Mm-hmm.
That's
I don't know.
I'm curious about in actual cases of PTSD, diagnosed cases, is the word itself enough to trigger people?
Sounds can, for instance.
If you were in Vietnam and you start hearing gunfire, that's one thing. But just hearing the word gunfire, does that ever do it for you?
I'm not sure.
No. So I will say that I have been triggered, but it wasn't by words. Like, it wasn't by, like, oh, someone said, like, you know, just the wrong word and I couldn't handle it. It was more so that there was a discussion around a certain topic that I had personal experience with. And what it did is it put me back into that situation again that happened in the past, and I felt a lot of conflicting emotions about it, a lot of anger, a lot of sadness, a lot of regret.
But it wasn't up to them
guilt.
To know that, though.
Well, right, and that's the thing. So it's not up to the other person to know that something can be triggering. And so, and I haven't been triggered very often. It does happen very rarely. It's a very uncomfortable feeling, but ultimately it is a feeling. And this is something that I think is important to confront and recognize and accept, instead of denying that you're feeling that and instead of avoiding feeling that. I think you should embrace that feeling.
It's your responsibility to deal with it instead of my responsibility to censor myself.
Right, exactly. It's not on the other person. It's on you to process those emotions and understand why you're feeling them, and understand that if you are being triggered by something, it's your responsibility to maybe remove yourself from the discussion of that content. I think it's a self-knowledge thing where you should know, what is going to cause you, you know, if you haven't resolved certain issues, what is going to cause you to move into emotional instability? So you need to protect yourself from that. It's a self-responsibility thing. So it's very uncomfortable, but at the same time, it's not other people's responsibility to protect you. It is up to you to work through those emotions. And thankfully, we live in a time where there's a lot of therapies that are being developed specifically to treat people who have PTSD and mm-hmm. become easily triggered.
Yeah. And as far as dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder and things like that, I mean, even, you know, I myself had to deal with legitimate therapy as a result of seeing some rather really messed up things. And it helped out a lot of people. But if anyone coddled me while I was dealing with that, a lot of stuff, a lot of that actually makes me more mad, and it makes me not even reflect on anything, because I'm like, fuck you, I can handle it. Like, you know, that response actually comes out of me.
Well, and that doesn't promote healing either, because all it does is shut things down.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So
I wanted to be, because you don't want to be, you want to be treated as an adult who's capable of being able to deal with this. Mm-hmm. And you yourself have to reflect on the idea of maybe the problem, the reason why it's hard for me to like connect with certain people is because, you know, for some people who've had to deal with like really hard breakups, you know, that's kind of, that can be a legitimately traumatic fucking situation.
Yes.
So from there, it's really hard to get in relationships again or trust people again because of those things. For me, there was, you know, specific things regarded to empathy that became a little bit difficult. But again, if it was an issue triggering, that wouldn't have, it wasn't really a trigger. It was acknowledging that and moving forward and kind of trying to build back those relationships. Because like for me, I was working for CPS. You have like three or four people crying to you a day, and you would start seeing it as a form of manipulation subconsciously. So people crying in front of you, like, fucking turn off that part of your brain. You just didn't even feel it anymore. You didn't feel the empathy from it. It took me a while to be able to deal with that again. And then another thing was people constantly lying to you. A constant fucking, you just start getting like, yep, whatever. And so you have to deal with that again. Like, why were they lying? Or why were they crying in this particular situation? So you can empathize with the position that they're in.
Yeah. So it becomes, you know, empathy instead of paternalism, which I view as the trigger warning side of things. You know, you're trying to be understanding and see where someone else is coming from. And that doesn't necessarily always include being hyper vigilant to protect them.
Yeah. Calvin, is there anything else you wanted to finish up on there? I think we've hit trigger as part of, we've triggered the fuck out of trigger. So
I think the only thing I would remind people of is if you spend a lot of time in the social justice warrior online community, I think you don't really comprehend what a punchline it has become to damn near everybody else who is familiar with the term. It is verging, or not verging, it has went ahead and verged on the point of self-parody.
By the time we posted this, I bet you it's not even relevant anymore. Because that's how quick the fucking internet moves. That's why I love you guys. MK, where can people find you?
You can check out my work at bitcoinnotbombs.com and freedomfiends.com. And then on Twitter and Facebook, I am MK Lords.
Okay, and hopefully Facebook will be back up soon.
Hopefully.
Okay, and as always, go to libertarian-atheist.com to find a podcast, YouTube channel, and everything else. And legallykidnapped.net to check out my motherfucking book, which is doing pretty well. So thank you guys, Legally Kidnapped, Case Against Child Protective Services. And on that note, obviously you can also find us on iTunes, a fucking Stitcher. You can find us at truthovercomfort.org, which is my old website. There's some connections through there as well. Find us, subscribe, review, tell me if we suck. I just want some kind of responses from y'all. So give me all that good stuff, and I will see you all soon. Bye-bye. Thank you.